three, two, one. Okay, I gotta go to the bathroom now.
Do it up, man. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of it because it's like you want to like be a bastion for like the future off airport. Like that's such a thing. It's such a push. Carbon right. Cubs, X Cubs, Kit Foxes, all RVs even, you know?
I think it's going to save general aviation, man.
This case?
Like seriously, like, no, just like backcountry flying.
Oh, yeah. From a vitality standpoint.
But do you think they're going to make changes to the laws as far as like for drones and stuff, you know, for like delivery drones and shit? Like, are they gonna fuck with
there's a lot of talk about you know, how they're gonna implement all that stuff, and I think some of the basic logic is that drones are gonna be limited to about 400 feet AGL, which they are now, and what they're gonna do is establish corridors along existing infrastructure, so like roadways and railways.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right, and so yeah, drones are gonna operate above those.
Because like, if they, you know, if Amazon gets their way and everything's delivered by drone, that's gonna make things quite complicated. But I guess if they stay below 400 feet, it really doesn't.
Not for like 50 years. Then they have their own shit to figure out.
Right, when we all go.
When UPS, FedEx, and Amazon are all doing it at the same time.
Well, you have 400. You have they'll be automated. They won't. They'll just.
But they still have to. They'll still have to be automated in their like lane, altitude wise.
Yeah, but then
if everybody wants,
they'll know where the other one is. It's you know, they're not going to hit each other.
Yes. Hopefully.
Right, and well, the big consideration too is what do you talk about, like, you know, passenger transportation vertical lift.
Right.
Yes. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about that.
What do you want to know about
all
it? It's going to happen.
I want to know all of it. Oh yeah, it's definitely going to happen.
Oh, vertical.
Well, I mean, there's a couple companies that are real close to getting FAA approval for certification.
Yeah, electric. You know, and,
but the problem is that they're not ever going to get actually certified until this Mosaic rule comes out. You guys heard about that?
No. Tell me.
We call it Mosaic. I forget what the acronym stands for, but it's supposed to be the revitalization of aircraft certification, right? They're basically redoing all of the aircraft certification standards for general aviation.
So they're making
I think it'll actually be good. It'll be
making
more based
it easier
on,
to.
Well, because we have since 2004 when ATSM started with the light sport standards, and there's a pretty good safety track there.
ATSM.
So the idea is,
did you just say ATSM?
Yeah, ATSM, is that what it stands for?
Is it ASTM?
I don't know.
Probably.
Okay. All right. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. I've never heard of it, like, tried to be pronounced into a word.
Yeah, I shouldn't have done that.
That's okay. You do you, buddy. You do you. No. I'm
anyway
drunk and talking about airplanes. It's great. I've never heard it said like that.
Right. Well, anyway, the idea is that those industry established standards are going to be applied to aircraft certification across the board, at least as far as certain categories.
The ASTM is?
Yeah. Right. And that's the idea behind this Mosaic. Yeah.
Flaps out for Harambe.
I don't know what that means.
Tyler Brunkhorst.
Harambe was that gorilla that got
Harambe.
Poached, maybe, or shot.
There's a different phrase they used. Than South Florida beaches during hurricane reporting.
Yeah, I forgot about that. No,
that's the beach
that
I go to.
That was everywhere, though.
But I know the most famous.
No, nothing.
The most famous one was at Juneau Beach in Florida, which is when I always go to. And the reporters like talking about the hurricane coming in, and some surfer with dreads on.
Blah blah blah, Harambe.
Yeah, something out for Harambe.
Anyway,
Akko used to always say it all the time.
Yeah, he's a gem.
Yeah.
Okay, so sorry. So they're gonna try and apply basically an ASTM, almost a international or global standard, instead of an FAR like Part 23, Part 25. They're gonna try and apply an ASTM standard to these eVTOL stuff.
Right, and for other aircraft as well, right? I mean, it's supposed to be one single sort of performance-based standard, which is going to apply, rather than the FAA's, you know, more or less arbitrary standards.
Okay.
Lee, what are you going to do? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I just had something stupid to
You're
say.
You're the smart one, Ian. You go ahead.
Ian, You just, take over. Yeah, if you and Scott are about to talk,
if I start talking, it's just something stupid. So
the problem is, Scott is louder to me than Ian is. That's the problem.
Well, Scott's the entertainment factor, right?
Right. That's my job.
I'm entertaining.
Yeah, keep up on the chat.
All right, Ian.
Oh, well, I don't do that, but
Ian, go.
Well, I don't know if I have much more to say. I mean, it's so that's the idea behind it, but they're going to actually sever the vertical lift component out of it, right? So we're going to get some new
powered lift.
Yeah, new LSA rules.
Mm. But it's not going to be light sport. Why? What?
So what they want to do is expand light sport, basically.
Yeah, but so what if it's a 30-passenger electric?
Well, it's not going to be that. Right, so that's why then? I said they're severing it from the Mosaic rule, right? So vertical lift is going to be its own separate rule.
What are they going to do?
We don't
about,
know what those standards are.
What are they going to do about fully autonomous planes? Do they have anything in the works for that?
Yeah, I mean they're thinking about it. I don't know what the rules are going to be.
Yeah,
we are so far from that, and this train derailment up there in East Palestine. We're so far from that now.
But I grew up in Ohio, and I literally thought that was the Middle East for like the first two weeks they were talking about it.
I did too. Yeah, Nicole had the news on and she was talking about it. I'm like, it's like, it's Palestine. Like, they probably don't have very good barrels there. And she's like, no, it's in Ohio. And I'm like, oh.
Or no, it's Palestine.
Did you guys hear the news?
I know.
Yeah. Like, Lee's got to hear the news behind that. They stopped saying Palestine to say Palestine.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know if that's how it's actually supposed to be pronounced.
I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. We don't know where that is.
Yeah. They started out saying East Palestine. And I'm like, well, it was on the news. And I'm like, why is this? It was, she had like Fox 8 on as local news, the local news, Cleveland news. And they're covering it. I'm like, why are they even talking about a train derailment in Palestine? Like, that probably happens all the time there. Like, stuff blows up there all the time. Well, right?
I lived down in Florida.
There's always something exploding in Palestine.
That's the normal for that.
Right? Yeah. It's like, why is this even a big deal?
I'm like the only person from Ohio, most people in Florida that in my circle that I know. Yeah. Everyone's all of a sudden coming to ask me about Palestine, and I have no idea where. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly where in Ohio it even is.
Yeah. Well, she had people from her friends from Maine like texting her, like, I hope you're okay. Like, don't drink the water. And we're like, what? We're like, it's on the other side of the state. Like,
yeah. That's how people Florida are with me.
Yeah. It's like, this has zero effect on us.
Like, I'm like, what? It's not even close to Lake
Erie. Yeah. Yeah.
Erie, Pennsylvania. They have a different story. They got all the fallout from...
Did they get some of it?
It all went east.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, vertical takeoff. The future of flying.
Yeah, the future of flight.
Here's my thing.
We're talking about single pilot or automated.
Yeah,
automated.
Right.
And if we can have trains that are fully automated, we're not going to have planes.
I understand that, but already, like, the
especially if Elon owns it.
Tesla FSD, the full self-driving, is 3 times less likely to get in a car accident than somebody that's driving the car themselves. So what if it gets to the point where an autonomous plane is 10 times less likely to be in an accident than a human-piloted plane? Why are they going to keep putting humans in the planes?
There's no trust in it still. You look at the Tesla now, nobody actually
If you look at the actual data, like if you watch like the news or talk to the average person, they'd be like, I don't want to trust a self-driving car. But if you look at the actual data, you driving your car, well, maybe not you because you're a good driver, but like the average person driving their car is 3 times more likely to get in an accident than somebody using FSD.
Have you seen the average person driving the car out there though? That's not surprising.
Well, right.
That's very different, I think, than the average pilot.
Well, that's probably two, but it's only a matter of time.
Yeah. The AI will get better.
Eventually, it's going like the F. Okay, if they can take an F-16 and train it to take out the best pilot in the world, presumably at flying an F-16, why can't they train a pilot to do everything that a commercial pilot can do? So my question is, when this technology reaches there, what sort of laws or what do you perceive them changing as far as like regulations and laws?
Well, I mean, they have a lot of regulations that they have to change, right? To require a crew.
Right. Because it's required and everything. But if the data reflects that it's actually safer to have something else flying the plane than a human right before it kills us all. Because it's only going to be a brief period of time. Like, it's going to be like, we let them fly the planes and then they kill us. But
hey, ChatGPT, why don't I trust you?
Right. Save a lot of jet A
eventually
just crash all eventually, these people.
It'll be like GTP7 or whatever. And GTP7 will be like, listen, humans, you have to let me fly everything. Ban the pilots. And the idiots that run the government will be like, okay. And then they'll ban the pilots, and then, you know, GTP will fly the plane for a while and it'll be really safe and nobody will die, and then all of a sudden they'll just kill everybody.
No,
but
here's
anyway.
The thing. It'll probably be ChatGPT or AI in some form telling the companies,
right,
we will save you this much
money. We will save
money.
You this, right.
Right.
Yeah. And then they will have the lobbyists tell the government.
Right. Exactly.
We don't need pilots anymore.
Exactly.
We're just making money.
Well, yeah.
So just that's when you just say, I'm not going to fly anymore. I'm just going to own stock.
Right.
And let's make a lot of money for
buy
6
stock.
Months.
That's my thing. Is buy stock in any of these automated anything that can be automated, buy stock in it, cuz they're going to make a ton of money.
And in the end, well, pilots are pretty whiny though. Where the AI isn't as whiny, I feel like.
Yeah. Right. The AI can fly for 24/7 nonstop over and over again. They don't want paid. They don't even want money. What do they need money for?
Weak.
Yeah.
Weak-minded pilots that need sleep.
Right. They don't need the sleep. They don't want money. They don't, you know, it's like...
There's no more Jimmy Doolittles out there that can just crank it out.
Well, I think, we have the Garmin Autoland stuff, right? You know, landing.
Yes.
Obviously,
talk to us about that.
I gotta go to bed.
Well, I mean, what about it?
All of it.
This is
you push a button and it lands itself, right? Yeah. What is it, certificated in 3 different models now or something? 3 or 4?
The Piper
and
turbine thing has
that's the stuff that's actually being marketed now, but
I think the writing is on the wall that it will eventually happen
where it's going to be it's going to be better than humans. Like I don't
know if there will never be a point where we don't have some level of human oversight. Right, I mean, it's going
to
be some guy sitting in his office
watching
10 or
12. As long as it allows us to have human oversight.
So, of course, it's all going to be really incremental, right? We're going to start with cargo. We're going to go down to single pilot cargo.
Yeah.
Then it's going
to
be...
I agree, but before that, does it need to be no conductor trains? The no drive...
Well, the train seems like
be the first thing.
It would.
That thing just happened, and that's why I brought
it
that
would,
up. That had three drivers on that train.
The problem wasn't the drivers. The problem is the maintenance, which I know somebody that worked.
But
did work at NS?
They worked there.
he worked at NS. He's late. He's on a little break right now.
Oh, administrative break?
He's on vacation.
He's putting the wiring in for Gandhi's new shop.
Yeah, he's on a vacation.
He's going to get the secret wire up to the ADF.
Yeah,
Gandhi's going to pay for electricity for.
He's on vacation, but anyway.
Just to get an ADF.
But anyway, he said that they cut all their maintenance crews, and that they used to have inspectors that would go not long before the derailment started happening. They gave them so many seconds per car. I don't know. I can't remember what he said, but it was they get like 60 seconds per car to inspect the brakes and the bearings and all that
stuff. Yeah.
He said NS cut their time in half.
To 30 seconds per car.
Yep. And they cut the inspection facilities by half. So they eliminated half the inspection facilities, and then they eliminated half the time that they had to inspect each car.
Profits are up.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know that derailments have to do with like the people in the train who are just basically, if you're driving a train, you're not driving a train, you're monitoring systems, right? So
that's what we do as pilots, for the most part, too.
Yeah. You're monitoring the system. So
that's not true. Don't shake your head. Yes, Rob, that's not true.
Well,
so true.
I guess it depends on what plane you're in, but I've talked to other commercial pilots who may or may not fly airliners that said they just monitor the systems.
So then what happens when we have automated systems that check
monitor
the trains?
Themselves.
Let Ian finish his statement, dude. Sorry.
Well, I mean, that was it. I mean, really, yeah. So, I mean, we're going to have a state, right? I mean, so now we have an individual that goes out and inspects all these train cars.
Uh-huh.
When in the future, these train cars are going to be able to, you know, drive themselves slowly. Yeah, slowly over a platform, which is going to say, you know, scan them.
Right.
Which, or they have.
They'll be able to do self-diagnostics.
They
have that now.
Yeah, they probably do.
No, they do. That one was flagged. That wheel bearing was running hot prior to this issue.
Right, and that was part of the NTSB's investigation into that, is that they didn't flag it early enough.
Yeah.
Yes. It was already flagged as running hot.
It was, so it was I think the important thing to note is that it was within standards.
The sensors are telling them.
Exactly. That's the thing.
I got to go to bed. It's getting late.
Scott's companies, they are very focused on their trailer wheel bearings. I know that for sure.
Yeah, we have had trailer wheel bearing problems many times. I got to go to bed.
Good night.
Thanks for staying on.
Good night, Scott. It's
great meeting you.
It's 11 minutes after.
I know, yeah.
He was supposed to be in bed 11 minutes ago. And he's like,
he's talking about trains, man. We got
10 minutes from his house. It's a rough day. It's a rough night for Scott.
It is, right. That's a company man right there. Everybody,
podcast man.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, you know what I mean. So like the way I see it is, yeah, we're going to start there at, you know, the trains, they're like one dimensional. They go forward and backward. You know what I mean? There's like, they're not going to deviate. They're not going to go up and down. So I feel like that's going to be there. But
they got some like track selection and stuff like that, and depots and whatever else too. Totally. So.
Totally.
But you're right. You know, it's not the same level.
Not even close. And then, like, I don't know that cars are necessarily that much less than airplanes, although they move in two dimensions, left, right, forward, back, but there is a lot more proximity to other people and other objects, so it is kind of hypercritical. Airplanes are much more defined if you're talking IFR operations, which I would assume are going to be very analogous to operating in a self-fly environment. There's going to be predefined flight paths, although maybe not flight plan, not like an IFR flight plan, but it's going to be very similar and very established tracks and altitudes they're going to have to fly and stuff.
I don't even know if that's necessarily true, right? Because part of next gen, you know, the whole air traffic control system is to enable aircraft now to fly direct wherever they are, right? You can always fly direct from point A to point B. And the way that they'll create traffic separation is through altitude and airspeed, because the technology that they'll have is going to be able to sense that, hey, you know what? There's going to be a conflict between these two aircraft that are at the same altitude.
Okay.
2 hours from now, right? And so they'll slow one down by, you know, 2 knots, something that's basically indiscernible to the average passenger, and then it's going to avoid any sort of traffic separation issue whatsoever.
We're right? so far, like, so give me a scenario where that will work.
How do you mean? Like now?
Yeah, right now.
Right, the idea is that it could happen now everywhere as long as the technology is
in place.
I
can't do that in a Lear 40 right now.
Right.
Because I don't have auto throttles, and auto throttles don't do that great of a job either. They can't do 2 knots. And I know that was an out there example.
Right, I mean,
5 knots? Exactly. Averaging a 5-knot difference between you and the aircraft ahead of you over a course of 2 hours, I suppose you can probably, I don't know. I've never flown anything with auto throttles. I've sat in the jump seat and watched it happen. But like, it's not, it's precise, but it's like, that's crazy. Because there's one thing between monitoring your airspeed within 5 knots, but then your ground speed is what we're really talking about. That's ground coverage.
Right, exactly, right. Yeah, because airspeed's not going to matter.
Totally different thing.
Otherwise, we have winds and everything else.
Exactly.
Also.
And they're going to change as you go south, north, east, west. That's going to change. So those are parameters that obviously I know AI can handle.
Right, and,
I get
and
all that.
Even then, right, we still have weather. You know, we have thunderstorms that develop and hurricanes and whatever, in tornado, whatever else that's going to be there.
Yeah.
That you have to have icing, right?
Okay, sure.
Do we need to avoid?
Yeah. So, you know, you deviate 5 degrees to the left or the right. And what does that do to your net? You know, you've added miles to your flight path, although you've kept a consistent ground speed. You've added distance, which gives you separation between the aircraft in front of you, but also kind of shortens some of the separation between you and the aircraft behind you. Now, maybe they need to deviate for the same reason you did. So it's, you know, net zero. Maybe they don't, because that cell that you're deviating around, that cumulonimbus that you deviate around, it won't be there by the time they get there. So there's a lot of things, and I know AI can sort all these things out, but my point is, you know, we need to start with the trains in the minimal, but to go and say, hey, we have an aircraft taking off from Chicago and an aircraft taking off from Dallas, and they're both going to Orlando, and that's maybe a similar flight time, and we need to stagger them just enough so they can go right in sequence, land, minimal aircraft intervention, minimal carbon footprint. I'm sure that's a very high priority, without, you know, making one stay in the air too long and minimizing all those things. I'm sure those are all priorities. I just feel like that, like seeing it in practice, what, like when they slow me down or speed me up, it seems real. It's going to be AI. I know can do what I can do. I totally get that. I'm not, I just think wide implementation is just going to be a lot tougher than just.
Right. No, and I don't think anybody disagrees with that. You know, it's going to be a long process. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. It might not happen during our lifetimes, even.
There's too many airplanes that would need retrofitted.
Oh, for sure.
And like, how do you, right. So my airplane I'm flying, you're not just going to ground it. Well, maybe they will. I don't know. But let's say they can't, but it needs to be compliant within a certain time.
You know what they'd have to do? They'd have to do like that. Do you remember Cars to Clunkers or Clunkers to Cash?
Cash for Clunkers?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Right?
I do.
That's what they have to do.
Let's all buy Toyotas. No GMs or Fords.
Let's all buy Gulfstreams, dude. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to pay us fair market value for a Gulfstream, right?
Yeah, that'd be our tax dollars, though. Yes, that's what it'd have to be. That'd be a terrible plan financially.
I think it's going to obviously improve drastically. And there's I forget the guy's name. I forgot the term, and I was just going to say, oh, so-and-so says this. The guy who worked for Google. I can't remember his name either right now. Ray Kurzweil, maybe?
No idea.
Does that sound familiar? He explains that, like, there's going to be a big uptick in the speed at which technology increases during our lifetimes.
Which is wild to think about, because you guys remember, like, the days before obtainable internet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude. Can you imagine it accelerating from here?
Right. It's wild.
That's called infinity. There's a symbol for that. I mean, straight up.
Yeah. So, like, I'm in school for software right now, and in addition to the show, obviously. And everyone's like, oh, like, Scott texts me every other week.
You're learning software? He's like, ChatGPT can do this now. Like, You're going to be in school for another year. It's going to be able to do it by the time you graduate.
And it's looked at in the software industry right now. There's a bunch of different opinions, but the opinion that seems the most logical is there's going to be a point probably in the somewhat near future in software development side where, yes, AI is going to be writing a lot of the software, but it's not like it can just take over all the software jobs. You still need a human at the end of the day, and it's unlikely in our lifetimes that this isn't going to be the case, where a human needs to review it to make sure that it is writing it and it is doing what, at the end of the day, the human wants it to do, if that makes sense. It's like right now you have junior devs and you got senior devs, and they give the junior devs a bunch of assignments, and the senior devs still have to kind of look over what the junior devs wrote for code to make sure it's not going to screw up the production. And they said basically it's kind of like a junior dev. You can have it do a lot of stuff, but at the end of the day, you can't just trust what it's doing and have it throw that code in a production environment. You're going to have to review it, and there's going to be humans who know what's going on to make sure that that code is good before it actually can get the signature to go into production.
What if the request for that code is actually from another AI?
What do you mean?
Software or entity.
What do you mean?
So what if it's an AI, you as a human needing something, AI interpreting what you need, sending that request, for lack of a better, I don't know what it would be, sending a request to another AI software to produce the outcome, the product, the service that your AI is, and you over time either very quickly realize the limitations of all of it, but you like how easy and you're unencumbered in your daily life. You just deal with the outcome and it'll be close enough and that'll be good enough. That's enough of that. Or
it's a world where if you forget a semicolon in 70,000 lines of code, the whole thing's going to go apeshit though. It's one of those, that's a bad example. Cause in that case, it's AI would actually be good to find that missing semicolon.
Much better than a human.
There's issues where that's not the case.
I'm saying you as a human, yeah, you're like the ultimate end user, but I just like, what if it's your AI that orders whatever from another AI? And there's no intermediary other than you as the final end user of that product or that service to catch it.
The software engineers, developers that were running like...
But your AI, they're only going to go after what your AI asked for. Oh, that meets it. And then it gets through their AI, through their developer, to you. And you're like, oh, shit, that's not the shoe size I ordered. That's not the bag of dog food size I wanted.
Maybe.
I'm just saying.
More concrete, though, like...
That's pretty concrete.
Like Wix.
The website and, developer?
Yeah. You can go Wix, Shopify. There's a bunch of these that like they have figured out.
GoDaddy?
It's not really AI. GoDaddy? Well, that's domain and hosting and stuff. Oh, this is more of like build you a website. Wix, Squarespace, Trent Palmer.
Squarespace.
Wix, Shopify. They solve a very, there's like, okay, there's people who just need a website that does almost the exact same thing over and over and over and over again. There's putting a different logo on it. They're selling different stuff. They're doing different things, but it's the same thing over and over and over again. Those software developers, there used to be a big business in creating websites for people who want to do that. Now it's almost nothing. You pay $20 a month or whatever, $35 a month. It's great. If a software developer gets hired by a company to build a website to that, they use Wix. They use Shopify. They use it all. But the stuff that's like more original, AI is a long way away from being able to do that.
The problem is though, is AI.
Like if ForeFlight didn't exist and someone wanted to go build ForeFlight right now, that is very difficult to do without a team of skilled engineers.
Yeah, but every AI program is like people. They will build it's, I don't even know what's out there. And I don't really give a shit because it all makes me crazy and want to buy guns. But okay, I'm just saying if the AI all works together, all different programs with different strong suits and whatever, however they're developed to be, and they all like kind of piggyback on each other. It's like people doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Like all you got to do is give them a foothold and they will build it and they'll probably build it better than we can.
Yeah.
That will come. That will absolutely come.
I think personally, it's a personal opinion. I think we're centuries away from that though.
Only because I don't think you're you're by far the expert on the topic in right here. But I don't think we should discount the exponential increase in computing power and learning ability.
Singularity.
Of them working together.
However you word that, that's what Ray Kurzweil says. Singularity.
Okay, I only know about that
we're talking black about. Holes. That's the big up
the bell curve
where the AI rapidly figures out how to be better and better and better. It's like a slow technology increase and then it goes crazy rapidly.
Yeah, same concept of just inverse concept of a black hole, basically.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And then we're in the Matrix.
Yeah.
And then we're in the Matrix. Have anybody ever seen Interstellar? Well, it's...
Yeah, Interstellar is like got to be one of my favorite movies. Maybe, for sure, top 10.
I've been more into John Wick lately.
I love John Wick. We got Andrew Wick in the chat. Okay. Are you related to John? Well, he's probably not in there anymore.
No.
It's, yeah. Hey, by the way, Aviation Mike, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Sorry we haven't acknowledged you. We're deep, deep. Yeah, Interstellar is a good one.
In the future.
It gives me heart palpitations, but it seems to be pretty scientifically accurate.
What do they say with the depictions of the black hole and
time space type stuff?
Yeah, time and space and stuff like that. Yeah, it's pretty wild to think about.
Oh,
Andrew says John Wick is my uncle.
Nice.
I bet he is.
Keanu Reeves.
Have you go YouTube him practicing for that movie?
Oh,
him
yeah.
Him and Jada Pinkett. Isn't that who it is?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's
Baham Joe. Long time listeners will remember Baham Joe, my drinking buddy who gave us one of our early reviews. I was in North Carolina. He bought us this beer and we were watching that whole YouTube video.
Going through the shooting course, Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, how he prepared for the Wick movies. It was more than I thought he did. Those are great movies, though. Anyway.
I feel bad. I haven't seen a single one.
John Wick?
Yeah, I've been meaning to.
I've only seen the first one.
They've been on my list forever.
I've only seen the first one. There's three more I get to watch.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Absolutely. Like, it's like, yes,
I watched it on my Hawaii to California flight.
Good for
you. In November.
Yeah.
It was on the thing on Delta. Something about
it. It's worth a watch.
Oh, it's, yeah.
I love guns.
Like,
I love guns.
It's America. Who doesn't?
A lot
of people don't, which is very ironic.
I love John Wick movies because it's the main point of the movie is he just, like, there's no.
He loves dogs.
He does.
That's the main point of the movie.
He's a dog lover. I'm a dog lover. And they don't beat around the bush. Like, the whole point of the movie is there's a dude who just goes and kills everybody. Like,
is there any metaphorical aspects of that you like?
I don't know. Like,
it must be
revenge.
That's kind of what Ian, back me up. I mean, he's talking metaphors. There's a metaphorical reason.
I don't know.
Well, they don't beat around the bush. Yeah. They just go and kill people.
That's why I like the movie. Taken.
His podcast. It's somewhat similar
to Taken. The first one, not the. Yeah, that was one where the sequels did not work.
How can you?
The original.
How can you?
The original Taken was great.
They should have stopped.
Yeah.
You got to know when you're ahead.
Yeah. That was a prime example of a movie that should have just been one. But, yeah.
What, Fast and Furious?
Well, I love Fast and Furious. I'm a car guy. Tyler knows. All 12 of them are where they are? Tyler's a big, what's that?
Is it all 12 of them?
I don't know how
many Fast and Furious there are now.
No idea. Tyler probably knows. I don't know. Well, he probably doesn't. He's a real car guy.
I watched like the first six of them and then they got old.
Isn't that enough?
I just got Isn't first that three. Enough? Yeah.
Three or
sad.
Four.
I got sad when What's-His-Name died.
Oh.
Oh.
Paul Walker.
Yeah.
And then also we had Chester Bennington from Linkin Park die like in pretty close succession.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, that's...
Paul Walker.
Happened, that's what right? I said.
I was
blacked out like I am when I talk.
Somewhat inebriated in Amsterdam when I found out about the Paul Walker news.
That's the best way to get through it.
Yeah,
that's the best way to get
through it. How are firearms regulated? Andrew asks on GA aircraft. It's a good question, man. State by state.
Can
I shoot out of an airplane? There's been some YouTube skit ideas when we got bigger production budgets that have
most states prohibit it.
Okay. Well, when our production budget gets a little larger, I may call you and ask which state we should film this in.
You can
Texas.
Andrew says you can shoot at wild hogs. I'm pretty sure you can do that in Texas, but
Texas.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure R-44 tours.
A special permanent
EARs.
What Ian? What'd you say?
I'm not sure if there's a special permit for that or not.
Okay.
Well, that's one of those things where you just like write the check and you make sure I can do it. It's like, I don't really care because I'm not flying the airplane. You can't take my license for shooting the gun. The gun's legal. Shooting the animal is legal. I don't care about the helicopter part. That's where I'm at.
As a passenger on that helicopter.
As a passenger on the helicopter.
As the aircraft owner.
I don't give a shit. I just want to shoot the hog.
We'll just put a fake panel in front of you and I of like a 150. Really, we're in the back of an R-44.
I don't want to do any of that. I just want to shoot the wild hog.
I'm talking for the YouTube video. We're going to write this off as a pilot ground LLC so like we're expense flying someday. It's a fake 150 panel.
That hovers. It's the only 150 that hovers. It was really windy that day.
Yeah.
And we were right at stall speed. If you listen really closely, you can hear the stall warning horn.
Oh, that O200, that Continental O200 noise.
I do like that O200, or that Continental, everybody.
Is that one of your faves?
I like the O200.
What was on the 206s? Bulletproof.
IO520.
And those were, you did not have good luck with.
I never had problems with them. In the Cessna 206 on amphibs that I flew, no problem. Now, I also treated it very gently, and it was also low time anyway. So,
okay,
like, if there were any ramifications of if I misused it, I wouldn't have seen them.
Talking more of the twin set run Lake Erie Islands flights for years.
Hot, cold, nonstop all day long. 20 to 30 cycles every single day.
Did all not year like round. That.
No, for 900 hours, they basically adopted the policy of topping them all new cylinders, meaning topping means all new cylinders either 700 or 900 hours. I can't remember the TBO off the top of my head. I want to say it's an 1800 hour TBO on the IO520. So they topped them at half life. Just to maintain compression through the typical TBO was the bottom line.
What was the year of 206s you guys had?
They were late 70s.
Okay.
And I don't remember the ages. Late 70s, early 80s.
When were you guys running the piss out of them?
In the early 90s through mid 90s.
Okay.
So when I brought up Mike Bush earlier, that's kind of what I was referring to. It was like the compressions on cylinders, right? And there's some idea now that compressions on cylinders really don't mean much.
I've always agreed with that. That's understanding basic mechanics. But yeah, go ahead.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could just be one of like a tappet on the top that's loose or something like that needs to be replaced. Not the pressure in the cylinder.
Yeah, well, the mechanics we had at the time, I would love to see somebody go tell them something different. But right.
They're very, very passionate mechanics. Right,
well, so the 60 whatever PSI on a cylinder doesn't, I mean, what does it really tell you?
It's an arbitrary number because that has no representation of the operating pressures exhibited in that combustion chamber when it's running. We get all that. I've had all these conversations. I would dare you to tell our director of maintenance anything different. It's just one of those things.
It is one of my dream episodes to get both of these mechanics on for a one show here in person. Would that not be a glorious disaster?
It would be a glorious disaster.
You might have to.
And they're both very knowledgeable.
Them. Incredibly. Well, that's the thing. Very passionate, very knowledgeable. And it's just
not
one
afraid
of those things.
To curse.
Definitely not afraid. Definitely not afraid of that. Well, yeah. Aviation Mike, 100%. And that is one thing their defense at all. Well, I don't have to warm up a Lycoming and it tests fine. So that was always part of their ammunition. I'm sure they had a lot other facets in their decision-making process. The one dude had a vendetta against Continentals, which is partly where I got mine, which I will never overcome. I need a lot of therapy. But Lycomings are just bulletproof, and we can run them under the same conditions to TBO and beyond. We got the exemption from the FAA for the extra 200 hours. No problem. I beat the shit out of them myself, and they all still, compressions are great. I understand compressions are not the whole thing. I understand that there are, you know, all the other factors. That's not what it operates under during normal operation, when it's warmed up, this, that, the other thing. Yeah, well, you can hear shit coming or the sound coming out of the exhaust valve, intake valve. I get all that. Pound on it with a rubber mallet. I get all that. You know,
I think another interesting point too is that compressions can get better over time, right? I mean, if you have an aircraft engine that sits for 6-7 months, it might test low, but then you run it for 3 weeks every day. Now the compressions are all of a sudden, you know, they go from 60 to 72, right? Wild.
I've never done that type of analysis. I know your train of thought. I'm just totally ignorant to that. Like having a take on it.
I don't necessarily follow your initial statement. I agreed with, but then your scenario you painted, I don't follow.
Just that, you know, you can let an engine sit over time and the compressions will steadily degrade, right?
Cold.
Based on a lot of, yeah. Well, I mean, for you say you have an aircraft and you let it sit for 6 months by itself, never run it.
Yep.
You test it immediately before you let it sit. You test it immediately after 6 months of not running.
Yep.
And compressions can degrade naturally.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you start using that aircraft again. You run it for 6-7 weeks. Now the compressions start to come back up.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
That was my whole point. Is that that's, I mean, it's such an odd standard of measurement because there's so many ways to, I mean, it's not an exact science, right?
No, which is why I don't think it should be handled as such. You know,
right, rusting the cylinder, anything else?
They basically put a death sentence on cold, low compression just because the majority of this individual's experience, as I understand it, was in marine engines. And then the majority of, I mean, that was his early experience in motors. Then his later experience, you know, he's an AI or IA, I'm sorry, IA and an AMP, all that good stuff. Very good school that he went to and everything. I mean, I definitely trust him, but I think he's holding on to some of the old wives' tales, old school thought processes. And in his exposure to a lot of Lycomings led him down, and he would apply that the same to Continentals, which they need to be warm. They need to be at operating temp. Who gives a shit what it is when it's cold? I want to know what it produces when it's warm. Like that's just like to me, mechanics 101. Like you don't do a dragster down the drag strip, a cold engine. It's warmed up. That's just the way it is. And so whatever, but we learned a lot from all of these experiences. And I think that company is still learning. But at the time, this was kind of their first exposure with big bore Continentals. And I think there's a very steep learning curve. I think they ultimately cut the experiment off short because they were not testing the same as all the Lycomings. You know, they had Brit Norman Islanders, two IO-540s apiece. They had three Navajos, two IO-540s apiece. Two Cherokee 6s, a Saratoga, all IO-540s. So they just had all Archers, every single member of the Piper Cherokee family they had exposure to, obviously all Lycomings. So they had all this background information and exposure to the Lycomings, basically bulletproof, which obviously is a benefit. If you have to treat something a little bit different, I mean, how can you not treat it as a little bit inferior? That's my opinion. But I think you just need to know, you just need to have experience with that airplane and that power plant to really know heads from tails. And they had all this background information and years, 20, 30 years of exposure in severe circumstances with Lycomings that could just weather the storm a lot better, in their opinion. They didn't know how to handle it. So they had no other way, no other lens to look at it through other than it's an inferior product, which right. I unfortunately have not been able to shake, even though I've had my own independent exposure to the same power plant, the IO-520, in the same airframe, a Cessna 206. I just still haven't really been able to
shake
it.
How did they handle, like, that? Those were all in, like, aircraft you guys had that was, like, their babies. But they did other, like, people would bring their airplanes in from the shop, the general flying population.
Yeah.
There was people, I'm sure, who had Continentals. How did they handle those?
They never liked them. They always had this negative this negative aura, you know, around them. Like, it's an 0470. Even though we all know an 0470 in the backcountry, the Cessna 180s, one of the most prolific backcountry airplanes there is. That's huge. You know, most Cessna 182s, probably 80% of them are 0470s. And then the Cessna 180, all 0470. Cessna 185.
Well, talk about the 0300s, right?
Yeah, that's a great engine.
Early 172s.
It's a great engine. Smooth as a sewing machine, smooth. Mm-hmm. 047, A65s in a Piper Cub, C85, C90s, all those in J3 Cubs. The original Super Cub had a C90 in it. Those are great power plants. 0300D, I don't know what all models they put, but they had those in the Cessna 170s, Cessna 172s.
Early 172s, yeah.
Yeah, they're all great. I mean, you had low displacement, a lot of cylinders. That's a recipe for a really smooth running engine. And I don't think they had it. I think those are basically a C90 with two more cylinders, from my understanding. Yeah.
Or an 0200 with an extra cylinder.
Or extra that. Two. Or that. Yeah. Basically, same difference. But when you start talking fuel injection, big bore, and a totally different cylinder design. I don't want to discount that. I don't want to say that the IO520 doesn't have maybe its deficits, but like an IO550, like on a Cirrus, Columbia 4, or a Cessna, TTX, Corvallis, whatever it was in the year that you bought it, phenomenal engine. That's in a Baron. That's in a Bonanza, Cirrus. All the different engines, or all the different airframes that engine is in, phenomenal engine.
Right. But did you follow that? Was it Cirrus just recently grounded most of their fleet from 2020 on?
Dude, I'm not an aviation nerd.
Oh, I haven't heard this either.
You seem to follow
aviation. I try to be an aviator.
I don't want to. I don't want to follow. Like, I don't want more aviation in my life. That's
anyway. What happened was, there was a service bulletin issued by Continental. Okay. I think I can't remember what the specific was. I was just curious if you knew anything about it.
Well, tell me about it.
I don't know. That's all I know about it. Oh. There's a service bulletin issued on that engine. They grounded them for a while, and Continental came up with a correction.
That could be something super simple. That could be something as simple as the fly or the in the accessory housing, one gear is made out of the wrong material.
Right. It was not an AD. It was an SB for sure. So.
Yeah. Okay. So the difference between a service bulletin and an AD is service bulletin is manufacturer, AD is FAA driven.
Yes.
So,
and subject to notice and comment.
That's good for the audience, though, if they don't know.
Lee does not want to be an aviation nerd and is. I want to be an aviation nerd and I'm not. So that's the summary here.
Product of my environment.
Yes. All right. Oh, that last part was plenty of for an in-between episode thing. Great. I'm getting sleepy unless you guys have any more poignant
Ian?
Things to drive home here.
I don't know, man. No, I think I'm good. I talked about all my legal stuff and
all right
for now.
I'm sure there's plenty more legal stuff. I mean, almost
you guys, we literally covered one regulation.
Yeah,
and barely.
There's a whole book here.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks again, Ian, for coming on.
Thank you so much. 2 weeks in a row. What a guy.
You've been here for weeks, man. Thank you. We appreciate it.
It was tough, but worth it.
Thanks for everybody hanging out in live chat. We're going to cut it off here. 3, 2, 1. Later.
See ya.
All right.
Thanks, Ian.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.